Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the BC Members Call taking place on the 8th of August, 2013. On the call today, we have Jim Sinalufui, Stefan Van Gelder, Mark Sloan, Elisa Cooper, Anjali Hansen, John Berard, Steve Del Bianco, Andrew Graves, Barbara Wanner, Marilyn Cade, Caroline Greer, Andy Abrams, and Aparna Sridhar. We have apologies from Zahid Jamil and Aisha Hassan. I would like to remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Elisa.
Thanks, Benedetta. So there's been really a flurry of activity in the last couple of weeks in terms of reports being released by ICANN and opportunities for us to comment, as well as some comment periods that have recently closed or are about to close, especially regarding the expert working group. So in today's session, I hope we can actually spend a fair amount of time with Steve and going through a policy update. But I thought we might start off with just a bit of a recap of the Durban meeting for those that were not able to attend. And then Marilyn will have a quick update from the commercial stakeholders group, if there's anything going on there. And then we'll hear from John in terms of what happened on the recent GNSO council meeting. And then a bit from Chris Chaplow, who I'm very happy to say has very, very graciously offered to stay on until the next election for the officers, which will be in February. So very, very much appreciated from Chris Chaplow. I know that's not what at all he had intended, but it's really just really very thankful for that. And then if there are any other things that we would like to talk about, let's get them on the agenda. Are there any other things that people would like to add to the agenda? Okay.
Chris Chaplow joining. Sorry.
Hi, Chris. Oh, well, you missed my many thanks to you, so thank you again. I let the members know about your very gracious offer to stay on as finance chair until the next election. So I think everybody is very, very appreciative of that. So let's start out. Let's talk a little bit about the meeting in Durban, especially for those who were not in attendance. I'll just tell you from my perspective, one of the things that we spent a fair amount of time in our BC meeting was going over some changes to the charter. And this is still on the top of my list of things to do, but we've had so many open public comment periods and other things going on. I just haven't had time to focus on putting a draft together and beginning to circulate that. But that's still on the top of my list of things to do. Are there any others who would like to kind of share their thoughts or what they took away from the meeting with the rest of the members? And I had also sent out kind of an update of exactly what we did at the meeting. So for those that are interested in, like, knowing, like, what we met, like, who we met with and what we discussed, contact me separately and I can resend that to you. But it would be great to hear from others. Ron?
Thank you, Chair. Just wanted to say that with all of the meetings that we've had over these last since the beginning of ICANN, to watch the growth and the dynamic that's happening within the ICANN community, for any of the members who do not attend the meetings, it's really, really worthwhile to try to get to one, because the work that you see in our chair's collection of all the things that happened, recaps of all the meetings and so forth, that doesn't really do any justice to the amount of work that actually happens there and the amount of collegial effort that goes into all of this. And I just wanted to say that the level of professionalism and the work that's going on within the ICANN community right now is astounding and really a pleasure to witness and be part of. So I just wanted to make that comment. And thank you to everyone who continues to make all this good work. And for those who have not yet come to meetings or haven't had the opportunity, I highly recommend that you do. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Stefan.
Hey, thanks, Elisa. Hi, everyone. Just thanks for the opportunity to comment on what was a very interesting Durban for me, being new to the BC. I just want to say I was very, very impressed with the level of professionalism that I've seen from this group, and especially seeing the work that the ExCOM members are doing. I'm very, very impressed with the amount of information that is sent to members, the way that that information is prepared, the way we are as a group always ready to respond to ICANN public comment periods, etc. Having experience of other groups, I can tell you that the what I've seen now of the BC, it's definitely a force to be reckoned with, and I'm very happy to be part of this group. Thanks.
Thanks, Stefan. Steve.
Yeah, I just want to make two observations. The first is that the business constituency continues to build an alliance with the At-Large Advisory Committee, or ALAC. And again, their purview is to represent at-large Internet users in a global sense, and they're not part of GNSO. They're a very powerful AC. At the Durban meeting, we worked closely to put a magnifying glass on concerns about security, stability, and resiliency. And we invited two BC members to attend an ALAC panel on protecting the public interest in the new GTLD program. So that's a relationship and an alliance we should continue to leverage over time. And I would also mention that the ESSAC, that's the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, seems to be coming out of its shell a little bit and recognizing that just because they issue a report doesn't mean that ICANN staff listens to what they want. So they're learning to lean on people like the BC, the ESSAC, and even DAC to get ICANN to pay attention to SSR concerns that the ESSAC has been talking about for 2 years. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Any other thoughts or comments on the Durban meeting or questions from those who did not attend about what happened at the Durban meeting?
Lisa, it's Marilyn. I wasn't able to raise my hand. I'd just like to make a quick comment.
Sure, of course.
We were able to work out an arrangement for the first time to hold a working session on Sunday afternoon with the CSG. And I'll just say this now. I was going to save it to later, but I think it's relevant to the overall feedback. That allowed us to not rush through the working session with the CSG on Tuesday. So I just wanted to mention that as something that I did think was a major improvement and helped a great deal in our efforts to have robust, thorough conversations ahead of time with the CSG on issues.
Okay. Thanks, Marilyn. Anyone else? All right. So why don't we kind of dive into what's going on in terms of policy and also talk about some of these recent reports that have just been released. I think that makes a lot of sense to spend a fair amount of time on that because there are probably documents that we're going to need to prepare comments on, and it probably makes sense to kind of check in and see where we are with our expert working group comments and so forth. So let me turn it over to Steve at this point.
All right. Thanks, Elisa. Everyone, I resurrected the policy calendar email that I usually send around, and I hope that you received that by email yesterday. And attached to it was the first item that I wanted to discuss. There are 9 open public comments right now, and I think we'll see another one today. And the first one is on the expert working group on the next generation directory services, and that's what we're now calling the new who is. We have a BC member, Susan Kawaguchi of Facebook, who's on that expert working group, and it's an example of a top-down group created by ICANN's CEO, but it's a group that seems to be making significant progress, and it might even be that progress that led the CEO to launch 5 new top-down strategy groups at the Durban meeting. But these comments are closing on August the 12th, and it's not a traditional comment period that has both a comment and a reply. Instead, it's just an initial comment period. And the comments are going to the expert working group, and not necessarily to ICANN's board or staff. And I only say that because I want you to realize that if we can't come to full agreement on what we want our comments to be, I am confident if it takes us an extra few days, we could still have the comments bear on their results. So So the attachment to the email I sent yesterday has the latest draft. And let me commend all the different BC members who stepped up and commented specifically on that draft. It was Laura Covington, who worked with Susan and Elisa and Jay Scott on the initial draft. Laura's on vacation, so we have to thank her in absentia. But as far as I can see, there are three issues in that draft, and I wanted to see if we could tackle those three issues first before we go after different elements of the draft. So the first is, let's take a look at the draft and see if we're comfortable with Marie Petullo's language, which was an attempt to express the concerns that PayPal raised, that Bill Smith raised, about security, stability, and resiliency on a fully centralized WHOIS. So if everyone could turn to that, let's see if we can get through this quickly. Are there any comments on the new compromise language at the bottom of page 2 on the centralized ARDS?
Steve, this is Jay Scott. You said you sent this out yesterday. I mean, I've
That's
seen
right.
it.
Not everyone else get it? I'm sorry, did anyone else fail to get it? I will re-forward it to you, Jay Scott, right now.
Okay, thanks.
Steve, this is Bill Smith. We're happy to accept Marie's language, but with some reservations. If this is the will of the group, then we will go along with it and potentially submit comments separately. But to try and give you a better understanding, or the group a better understanding of our concerns, basically any proposal for a centralized Internet service requires or demands special attention by us as a group, and not just as business advocates, but as people who care about the Internet. Second thing, any aggregation of data for ease of analysis for one purpose facilitates its use for other purposes. And we've seen the world's reaction to such systems. Thirdly, individual vetting is an extremely expensive and time-consuming process if done properly. And if it isn't done properly, there's no reason to do it. Next, global ICANN policy, and I mean global policy, is truly international scale for vetting and gating access, will invite intergovernmental action, especially if law enforcement is included in this. So that's something I think that, if not the business constituency, ICANN needs to consider, or the community needs to consider.
Bill, could you explain what you mean by intergovernmental action on the centralized vetting?
Sure. The ITU or others will come in and say, no. ICANN cannot develop a policy of global scale. That type of policy for law enforcement professionals is the remit of the UN and others, not a U.S.-based corporation. And finally, this is the last point. We are unaware of any similar system that operates at the scale of the proposal, and just believe this is going to be an extremely expensive walk into uncharted territory. We do commend Susan and all the others on the EWG for the work that they've done. The output of this group is, in fact, a step forward. But we caution basically throwing away a system that, while has lots of problems, has, in fact, functioned, especially if we're replacing it with one that we believe will require considerable time and money, both by those who operate it, but also by those who have to use it. We know of no such system that exists, and are quite concerned that even if one did exist and could be made to function, that it would be very expensive and complex.
So, Bill, thank you. So you've expressed that you are willing to accept the compromise paragraph. It's at the bottom of page 2, which raises these concerns, but not in a very specific way. You said that you have some reservations, which you've just explained, and you also said that PayPal will be submitting its own comments to the EWG.
I said we may.
But it, you may. So keep in mind that we have the time. If you want to specifically suggest changes to that paragraph at the bottom of page 2, you don't have to do it now. You could do it over email over the next couple of days. But I would not say that that compromise is necessarily the consensus of the group yet. Too soon to draw that conclusion, because you make some compelling points. A lot of us, though, look at this relative to the current distributed system of who is, where each and every vendor runs it differently. So a lot of us are attracted to the standardization one achieves with a centralized system, and I think you're sounding a voice of caution that there are vulnerabilities associated with being centralized. It's not as if you're saying don't go centralized, but we ought to be aware of these risks and take extra steps to mitigate them. So I appreciate that perspective.
So I'll point out a concern, right, that we have, and that would be around the recommendation that there be a single centralized point of vetting and gated access for law enforcement and security professionals. Right? Makes it easy. On the one hand, conceptually it's easy. And I've heard, other than PayPal, no one object to this.
May I recommend that everybody look at the middle of page 3, where the paragraph that Bill is speaking of is contained. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. So we suggest that this makes about as much sense as suggesting that for those who require protection for privacy reasons, for whatever reasons they may be, whether it's free speech, domestic abuse, lots of reasons put out there why we need privacy and proxy services. We believe the proposal to centralize vetting and access, gated access for law enforcement and security professionals makes about as much sense as centralizing the vetting of individuals who demand or require privacy. You can imagine how people would react to such a proposal, right? A single point that any authoritarian regime wanted to go to, right, to gain access to personally identifiable information on all of the dissidents. That'd be, you know, we know that people would, one, that this would be a highly valued target and almost impossible to harden, and that people would object to it. But when we do the same thing, make the same proposal for law enforcement and security professionals, that's perfectly acceptable. And believe me, these security professionals, some of them, in the work that they do, are, in fact, putting their physical person at risk.
Got it. And keep in mind that dissidents who want to protect their identity with a registration can use privacy and proxy. That wouldn't be interfered with for most of them. So you're right, it's centralized, but it may not be very informative. It's just a privacy or proxy. Let's see in the queue, Stefan and Jay Scott. And Marilyn. Okay, go ahead, Stefan.
Thanks, Steve. I think what Bill's just said is, and what you've just summarized, are good points that perhaps we can try and feed into the document as a compromise solution by adding some language that would suggest that the new model could not be simply introduced as a replacement, direct replacement or swap of the current who is model, but rather phased in, and that would be a recommendation perhaps from the EWG. I mean, Susan can probably speak to this. I don't know if the I can't remember if the EWG has got to the implementation phase of the proposed model that they've put in the report. But perhaps it would be useful for us to speaking to Bill's don't replace something that currently works with something that's not tested. Perhaps we could suggest that be phased in gradually and that be part of the implementation model. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Stefan. Appreciate it. Jay Scott?
Yeah, this is J. Scott Evans. I completely disagree with everything Bill said, and I completely disagree with what we just heard from Stefan. The reality is that the business community and the IP community have been fighting for this for 14 years. So to now say this is something that we don't want because nobody else does it is completely inconsistent with 14 years of advocacy that the business community and the IP community has worked very hard to do. In fact, I would ask Bill to check with our FBI and government representatives, because it's my understanding this is something they've been fighting for as well. So they don't need him to advocate. I am highly offended that we would advocate in our paper a position that goes totally against what we've been advocating so hard for in the last few years. I am not going to agree to any kind of consensus that gives ICANN some way to scuttle this effort, and that's exactly what this type of language does. Now, I'm okay with Marie's compromise language, because I believe Marie's compromise language just says, like with anything we do at ICANN, we need to proceed thoughtfully and with caution, and we need to consider that everything has certain ramifications, and those all need to be considered in the implementation. But I am not going to be comfortable and not going to agree to anything that criticizes this.
So, J. Scott, to clarify, you're okay with the blue text on page 2 and 3 with Marie's name in front of it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, J. Scott. Marilyn,
I'm raising
Marilyn Kate.
Thanks. Let me comment on, first of all, J. Scott, it is at least 14 years, right?
Yeah.
And I want to be sympathetic to the expression of some of the concerns that Bill raised, but to propose a different rationale for why we need to stay the course and come up with some solutions that are going to meet our needs broadly and the needs of registrants. And I do think that we also have to remember that a highly distributed SIN who is environment is also very, very vulnerable. It has its own form of vulnerability, just as, of course, a centralized approach would. I do think we should support asking for FSAC-supported studies, and notice I use the term FSAC-supported studies, because I do think we're going to be better off with some for-fee studies, not just the kind of report that the FSAC is able to do. The FSAC has already done a number of reports. So I would support the idea of our thinking about strengthening what we ask for in terms of the studies that validate how to limit the risk. On the issue of the list of law enforcement experts, my understanding from discussions with the FBI and Interpol and other parties from law enforcement, not just from the U.S. and Europe, but from other countries that have come together at the ICANN meetings, is they are looking for a sort of an enhanced 24/7 list, similar to the list that the Department of Justice maintains today. And so maybe we could explore that and understand it a little bit better. I think Bill was raising a concern about the more additional categories of security experts who might end up on such a list, and both their company may not be willing to have them put their personal contact details on it, but there may be other issues that Bill identified, and maybe we could come up with a clarification of what the categories are, because if you're a law enforcement person, you're probably being asked to put some kind of official access details in there as opposed to your personal details. But I do think we do need to continue to support the idea of a rationalized centralization and aggregation of this data, and we're not going to get vetted data if we distribute it widely around the world in the either the registries or the registrars. The final point I would make, and I think David Theris is on the phone, but I think there is, we need to be a little careful about thinking that we can distinguish between that a non-commercial site may actually be a private citizen or may be a safe site. Some sites mask themselves as non-commercial for nefarious purposes. So maybe we need to soften, we need to modify our language about asking for a bright line test and just saying that criteria, maybe we should say that criteria that can be verified should be established.
All right, thank you, Marilyn. That turns to the second question with respect to this draft, which is whether we, how do we address this distinction between commercial and non-commercial? And this is contained in the draft at the bottom of page 4 and the top of page 5. So given that we want to conclude this drafting very soon, it's best for folks to take a look at the language that's in the draft, the one I circulated last night, and make specific comments about that language. Because in it, I do think we accept the fact that there are distinctions in most regimes between commercial entities, since they are usually required to be reachable for purposes of fraud and other law enforcement. So if a commercial purpose site has special responsibilities in nearly every legal regime. I see Stefan in the queue, but I do want to try to wrap this up. I don't know. Lisa, tell me what's the hard stop at the end of the policy discussion on this call?
Well, since we don't have any other business to cover, I think we can continue. And I do want to make this, like in the future calls, the core of what we're discussing, these policy issues. So I would like us to continue.
Steve, this is Bill. I'd like to raise my hand.
Okay. And again, we have three questions on the table with respect to this draft. Let's go 5 more minutes on this draft and then turn to the rest of the policy items. The three questions on the table were the paragraphs on the compromise with respect to SSR concerns. So from what I've heard, there's nobody who's objecting outright to Marie's paragraphs, and I'm glad about that. We should discuss this commercial entity distinction, and whether or not the final paragraph that Marie suggested for inviting the country code TLDs to consider a centralized two is something else to consider. So I'll take a cue. Let's try to get comments in 5 more minutes. I have Stefan and Bill Smith so far.
David Ferris.
David Ferris, welcome. So Stefan, Bill Smith, and David Ferris.
Thanks, Steve. Very quickly, just a point of clarification on what Jay Scott said earlier on. Just want to make sure I understand the his comments, and I'll do so by asking Jay Scott a question. Would you be comfortable with the idea of my suggestion was just that we add language saying that this would be phased in and not just simply replaced one day. You know, you just switch off the who is and switch this on. But we phase it in, which seems to me to be a pretty common sense thing to suggest anyway, and it's certainly not suggesting that we don't like this model, quite the contrary. So I just wanted to be clear if Yahoo and Jay Scott would be comfortable with that idea. Thanks.
This is Jay,
go ahead, Jay Scott.
I am not comfortable with putting in anything that gives ICANN an excuse to slow this down. We don't need to tell them how to do this. Anybody that knows how to run systems knows that you don't just flip a switch. Now, and even if we tell them if they're going to do it wrong, they're going to do it wrong no matter what we say. So I just don't want to give them any language where they can say, well, even the business community thinks that we need to drag this out another, you know. I mean, I remember Marilyn having these discussions in Montevideo, Uruguay,
right,
in 2001. And we are still stuck. So I don't want to give them anything to continue this inertia. So, no, I do not feel comfortable with that.
But Jay Scott, you are comfortable with the language that's in the document. And
I am.
And that's great. Thank you. Appreciate that. I think it's Bill Smith and then David Ferris.
Okay. So we respect Yahoo's right to express the strength of its opinion. I find it surprising, however, that Yahoo does seems to fail to understand the issues that we've presented. At least that's my interpretation. To Stefan's comment, we do not support a phasing in of this approach. The concept as presented is seriously flawed. Okay? And I offer, I will not say them. I offer 3 and 5 letters. Okay? And I hope everybody can understand the 3 and 5 letters that I'm talking about that have been in the news lately as an example of why this is such a bad idea. Finally, PayPal does not support arbitrary proposals to solve long-term problems. And we view this proposal as I've said before, deeply flawed, and as a colleague of mine expressed, we think it is madness to go forward with it. We feel very strongly about it, but I hear very strong opinions on the other side, in essence, that regardless of what the proposal is, we must accept it because we can't slow this down. We believe there are other ways, and especially in light of current events, we believe that the community, the business community, and ICANN need to consider them. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And, again, I sense a strong majority of BC members want the SEC study risk mitigation measures for the centralized access and the centralized vetting. So that is not an attempt to slow down, nor do I think it will actually slow things down much because, J. Scott, as you know, it will take years before ICANN pulls together all of the machinery and contracting to do a centralized ARDS. And I would ask SSAC to come back with studies, risk mitigation studies, in the order of months, not years. So if we start them right away with a comment like what we're anticipating, then I don't think it contributes to delay, but it should identify the risks Bill is concerned about, and ideally then ICANN would take steps to mitigate some of those risks. You can't mitigate them all, I understand that, but I don't sense that asking for studies is going to create delays. David Ferris.
Hang on, Steve, on that. If our objective, which it appears to be, is to move this forward quickly, it's counterproductive to request additional studies.
I don't think that our objective is to just move it quickly. We want to do it safely, and we want to do it as soon as we can. So, I'm happy to take a show of hands for who would support the language in there. And the language in this draft asks for further study of the risks. It doesn't throw out the studies. It doesn't ignore the risk in the interest of expedient, in the interest of doing it fast. But I don't think you would characterize that the BC is trying to ram this through, because that's not what the draft says. All right, Bill. David Ferris.
Great, thanks. So I was going to move on to the commercial versus non-commercial issue. First, I apologize to everybody for posting so late. I had a bit of a challenge posting as our email addresses have changed and it wasn't part of the BC private list. So apologies for that. But as Marilyn mentioned, and I'm sure many of you have seen, I did post before this call today an email raising concerns regarding the distinction between using the distinction between commercial and non-commercial as the basis to determine whether or not information should be made available or whether people should be able to utilize a proxy service. As I mentioned in my email, some sites may not have a commercial intent in that they do not seek ads and gain revenue via ads, and they do not engage in e-commerce. However, they may provide content that actually competes with commercial enterprises and therefore has a commercial impact. And we don't think that people should be able to hide behind what we would constitute to be illegal activity by using a proxy service and disguising who is the actual operator of or the registrant of the site.
David, I'm confused now. this exploration of commercial, non-commercial would suggest that anyone with commercial purpose not be allowed to use privacy proxy. In other words, not be allowed to hide. And the only ones who could use privacy proxy would be those who do not accept payments.
No, the way you defined commercial were people who were sites that either earn revenues by, I can't remember the exact wording, I don't have it in front of me, but it was either e-commerce or advertising. A site may do neither of those, but still the site might constitute a commercial impact for another company.
So just so I'm clear, you're suggesting that privacy proxy ought to even be more restricted, and that you would even raise the bar beyond just sites that accept payments and show ads.
Well, as I mentioned in my email, I actually think the easier way to handle this might be to address it in the reveal functionality. Well, I don't know if it's functionality, but the reveal process for a proxy service. So that if there's a justifiable claim that a site is engaged in illegal activity that would have a commercial impact on another commercial enterprise, that you could get the data from the proxy service.
Got it. So it's a combination of setting the bar between those who can and cannot use privacy proxy, plus number two, strong relay reveal rules for the privacy proxy service provider.
Right.
There's already an existing process underway to define the accreditation of privacy proxy providers and the rules they have to use, right? That's in parallel to this. It's not even part of the EWG at this point.
Right. Understood.
All right. So, David, what I would invite is if you take the draft that was circulated last night and take a look at that section. I do think it's appropriate to discuss it at the two-step, that wherever we draw the line between commercial and non, we still want to have strong relay and reveal rules for when that has to be done. And we may not be able to make strong recommendations, but at least raise that it's a two-step process.
I will take a look at the current draft. I apologize. I was out in meetings most of the day until the call, so I wasn't able to.
And David, in your second comment with respect to whether we have offended others with the notion of authoritative regimes, I would invite you to look then at the bottom of 2 and 3, because that language now doesn't contain that kind of rhetoric, compromised rhetoric. I think it does address your concern.
I will look at that, too, and I will post to the list, and apologies for not having had the time to review it in advance of the call.
Not at all. A lot of moving parts here. Some of this was just updated yesterday, so no problem. All right, I see Aparna and then Jay Scott, and then we're going to terminate the EWG discussion. Go ahead, Aparna.
Well, I had a little bit of a question about sort of the bright line, if there is one, that David's characterization of what's commercial and what's not is. And I think, my question is, I think the term commercial effect can be quite broad. So, for example, let's say I write a blog on politics and I am a somewhat inflammatory person and I I destabilize a government. That's obviously going to have economic effects in the country that is destabilized, right? So I think almost anything can have a commercial or economic effect. So I look forward to reading the language, and maybe there will be something to sort of cabin the reach of that term. I don't want to comment on it without sort of reading it in the draft, but I just raise a concern that it seems to be a potentially very broad characterization.
Aparna, this is Steve. I think you're right, and David's finesse for that is that it's better to do a hardline rule for who can use privacy proxy. But commercial effect can be among the criteria, among the justifications that relay and reveal are required by the privacy proxy provider. If I show a proxy provider, evidence of actionable harm, which includes commercial effect, we are looking for ICANN rules to require the privacy proxy provider to reveal. So that's what I mean by the second step of the two-step. Anxious to see what David comes up with. And, David, I'm happy to help with that. I've been working on this project for years.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
David, okay. Thanks, Aparna. Great point, Aparna. And commercial effect is probably not going to be the bright line we're suggesting for eligibility of privacy proxy, but we'll mention commercial effect among the actionable harm elements that ought to trigger an obligation to reveal. And I have Jay Scott in the queue next.
Yes, Bill would like to be in as well.
I say that I share Aparna's concerns, and I think we have to be very careful here because I think you're going to fall into a trap with the people who don't want any distinction at all or any ability to do that. I think I was more encouraged towards the end of David's comment when he said it could be handled in the criterion for when a proxy service needs to turn over the information, and I think that is definitely where it should be handled. And I like the use of the term illegal. So you need to look at that and make that be very careful because this is a slippery slope and we just fall right in a quagmire.
This is David. And I jumped the queue. Can I go back in the queue?
No, go ahead, David.
Just to make very clear, I think I mentioned this in my comments that I posted, we support trying to find a system that protects people who are engaged in political speech because we understand the challenges around that, especially when it comes to particular governments who make what we would consider to be political speech in the Western world illegal. I'm sensitized to that. I understand the concerns that are raised. And as Steve and I work in drafting something, we will definitely keep that in the back of our mind. But thank you for flagging it, and I just wanted to raise that I'm sensitized to it, and I hope that I conveyed that in my comments that I posted.
All right, thank you. And Bill Smith as the last speaker on this topic, and then we're going to move on. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, so having been on the Who Is review team, I was very supportive of a bright line between commercial and non-commercial use. There's support for this in the EU in that if you are engaged in commercial activity on the web, you must make available information about who you are, how to contact, et cetera, to consumers. And it was certainly for PayPal, this is a very clear and supportable line in terms of if you are on this side of the line, you must provide information. You may not use privacy proxy services. And if you're on the other side, you may. Not that you will necessarily be granted, but you are able to. I'm encouraged by the discussion about whether in a reveal process things would have to happen, but I think, I'm with Aparna and Google's concerns on how broadly this could be interpreted. You make political speech, that's going to have an economic impact, potentially. And that could compel a privacy proxy service to reveal information about a dissident. That doesn't make sense, in our opinion. And I guess I would ask David, what's the scale and scope of the problem that he is trying to address? I'm not seeing it as very large, but perhaps it is. And then even if it is of moderate size, aren't there other avenues of redress here that if someone is engaged in illegal activity against a commercial entity, that entity has other means at its disposal than learning the identity of the individual? They could go to a hosting provider. They could go to the registry. They can go to any number of places and seek injunctions or other things to take the site down. So the impacted party has both has the ability and the means to take effective action, whereas those who are engaged in free speech or whatever may have less ability to do so. And so we've got to pay attention to this and say, okay, where not everyone is necessarily going to be supported 100% in the systems that we come up with. But do we have systems that are simple, easy to use, and address the needs of 90 to 95% of the folks, and the other folks may have to employ some other mechanism? So I'd ask that we consider that. I am also looking forward to the language. Thanks.
Right, and keep in mind that if those who are eligible for privacy proxy take advantage of it, and a particular government claims that they are breaking the law, doing something illegal, that government will expect that when it accesses the centralized WHOIS, that it gets a pipeline to the privacy proxy provider, that it will provide evidence of illegal activity to the proxy provider, and they will fully expect a reveal of the identity. And that is a dilemma. That is a dilemma because a centralized regime will have to respect the laws of I don't know which country. Today's decentralized regimes mean that, well, if you're in the Netherlands, you're not going to get access to a relay reveal solely on the basis of free speech concern. So the differing regimes today create a patchwork problem, but at least they do allow people to selectively register and buy proxy services from regimes that won't reveal. So we are going to have to come up with, we are going to have to put that in language in there, recognizing we haven't solved this problem. Our comments will not solve this problem, but at least the BC can responsibly identify a two-step process, eligibility and relay reveal obligations, and acknowledge the fact that this may not, this may present issues for dissidents who want to retain anonymity. One thing to remember is that a dissident doesn't have to get a domain name. They don't have to be a registrant to offer dissident speech. Dissidents can use other people's platforms that don't require them to register a domain name and even use the WHOIS system at all. All right, so I'm going to move on to the rest of the items on the list. There are 9 total public comments out. This is only one of them. The other 9 are listed on the screen in front of you. And I have particular interest in that we look at the proposal to mitigate name collision risks from the new DTLD delegations. This is number 7 on the list. And that would, in my opinion, be the one where I want to recruit BC volunteers to help draft those comments, since it's BC members, the general business community, that is most likely to be impacted by internal name collisions and internal name certificates. Having said that, I'm willing to take a cue on levels of interest in any of the other 8 comments that are listed on the screen in front of you, and I'll be happy to coordinate and assist if anybody wants to work on those. I'll take a cue.
Steve, it's Marilyn.
Marilyn, and then Elisa. Go ahead, Marilyn.
I have a question and then a comment. Because I do think that 6 has in the past been of high interest to the BC, and we may even have members who are very expert in that topic, so I just wanted to ask that question. And then I also had a question about 8. I haven't had a chance to look at 8, but the rights protection mechanism requirements were very much the focus of our straw man, so I wanted to flag those 2 and ask questions about them, and then I am interested in the name collision issue, but I'll just go back on mute and if the
yeah. Could great, thanks Marilyn. And that UDRP item number 6 is all the way to the point of what is a relatively non-controversial recommendation on the PDP to the board. John Berard is on the line, and I know you talked about it on the August 1st council call. Is that recommendation in exactly the shape the BC wants it, John?
Stephen, I was distracted, and I apologize. Read for about a second, and then I can answer.
Good, thank you. Just take a minute to jump ahead, and then you come back to that later on. Marilyn, thanks for volunteering to help with the name collision. And we can quickly take a look at those RPM comments, but I believe it's about the mechanics of implementation more than the policies that we were successfully able to get through the straw man. Elisa Cooper and then Ron Andruff.
So I would say if John says that we're happy with the locking of the UDRP, we should just write a quick comment on that to be supportive of it. In terms of 7, the main collision report and the recommendations. I think we should submit comments on that, as well as the mechanics related to the rights protection mechanism. And I have some resources. I can help draft comments on 7 and 8.
Fantastic, Elisa. Thank you very much.
And probably maybe we can hear from Ron, then probably we need to get a quick update from Marilyn. If there's anything else on the CSG she wants to talk about, then we need to hear a quick update from John, what's going on at Council, and then from Chris Chaplow on anything that we need to know in terms of finance.
Okay, I have Ron Andruff in the queue, and then I was going to wrap up briefly because Jay Scott, before you turn over to them, Jay Scott was working on a geographic indicator debate. So, Jay Scott, after Ron Andruff speaks, can you give us just a minute on the current status of your drafting and what that's all about? Go ahead, Ron Andruff.
Thank you, Steve. I just wanted to flag the what I find something to be, I find this proposal to mitigate name collision risks popping up so quickly when we've got this all of these studies coming out now that have said very clearly IAB, IETF, the CAVE report, also Lyman Chapin's Interalp, all of these things are saying that the name collisions are a very, very serious issue. And I'm just finding it very strange that all of a sudden we've got this proposal to mitigate name collision risks when the risks are so intense and so significant. It just seems to me this is being driven a little too fast, and I'm confused and concerned. And I have to also apologize. I've been out of the mix for the last week, so I'm a little bit behind the ball on this one. But it just seems that this has come up very, very quickly. It's not a normal situation, and perhaps you can clarify for me, Steve, if I'm off base on this or not.
You're not off base. There's two things to look at. You can very quickly read ICANN's proposal, and if they're indefinitely stopping home and corp, 20% of incalculable risks will be parked for a little bit, and the others will proceed. So, in fact, their recommendations were very, very quickly done, and they were in response to the Interisle report. Okay, so it all comes together, and I know it comes together quickly. Having said that, VeriSign just released a significantly more detailed analysis going back several years of other strings that will cause internal name certificates and name collisions as well. So that probably affects that 20% in the middle. So, Ron, please do read the recommendation report. If you still feel as if these are ships that have passed in the night, let us all know. But I think it all kind of fits together.
Can I just jump in here? So we'll have another meeting before the initial comments are really due. So at our next BC meeting, we can spend a lot more time discussing the contents of those reports and our comments.
Fantastic, Elisa. And then, so really quickly, Jay Scott, can you talk about your geographic indicator? And then Phil Corwin, some of the work on standardizing contracts for URS providers. Jay Scott?
Just real quick, I would, Steve, like to work on the name collision issue with you. Secondly, with regard to the geographic indication, I'll have something by mid-next week. And it's just going to be basically a proposal for bigger work, and it'll set out the rationale for what I've been talking about in writing and have said verbally so everybody will have something to ruminate over. And that those people who wish then to participate can decide to participate, and we can have a discussion. And then we can all come up with, see if we can come up with some sort of consensus position that we could then provide to the larger group. This is merely going to be a brief one-pager to sort of see who gauge interest and to see if people are willing to move forward.
Thanks, Jay Scott. I appreciate that. Earlier, Sarah Deutsch and Stefan had volunteered to help with
that
drafting.
And I'm going to make sure that they're on board with the one-page draft before I circulate it to the wider group.
Thanks. And this is not part of the public comment, folks. This is an initiative we're taking in response to the GAC advice on geographical indicators in the TLDs. And, again, ICANN has not posted GAC advice for public comment, so there's no place for us to lob this in. It would just be a letter we would send into ICANN if we can come to agreement within the BC. Phil Corwin. Can you tell us a little bit about your initiative on centralized contracts for URS? Not hearing Phil. We might have lost him. Phil had been in touch with Mahmoud to talk about... Okay, go ahead.
I put it on mute, and then I forget to take it off. We're not talking about number 8 here, rights protection mechanism, which just came out in the last 48 hours, I believe. I haven't really focused
You're
on
not. This is a different initiative. Why don't you explain?
Right. Yeah, I had raised by email with the group, and I'm going to prepare a short draft letter for review by BC members this weekend. On the day after the Durban meeting ended, I can put out a UDRP study of which there was no notice that this was being prepared. There was no board involvement, as far as I know, and there was no public announcement. It was very hard to even know they had done it. And the thrust of this is a staff document saying that no type of agreement with UDRP providers is justified. In fact, it would give us less flexibility in making sure they're doing a good job. Now, that's contrary to an established longstanding BC position that we just reiterated in regard to the Arab Center for Dispute Resolution. At your suggestion, Steve, I checked with Mahmoud to make sure that their position that they had no problem with the standard agreement and would abide by any that was established in the future. And the other concern is here is that if and when there's ever a PDP on the UDRP, which wouldn't be till 18 months after the first TLD is delegated, so it wouldn't be till that this is an issue that should be on the table for the community, not dictated by staff. So I'm going to work on a draft, short draft letter raising some of these issues to get some responses from ICANN. That's the thrust of it, and if anyone has questions, be happy to answer them, but it might be better to wait for that draft to circulate.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, I'm really gratified that so many more people are diving in and getting engaged and being passionate about policy here in the BC. It's a pleasure to work with all of you. Thank you. Back to you, Elisa.
Yeah, so we are almost at time, but I did want to get an update from John Berard in terms of important activities at the council level. So, John, if you can get us done in 2 minutes, that would be awesome.
Sure. The special council meeting on the first to cast a single vote for the motion on the creation of a implementation review team on the locking of a domain name. It was a fairly tactical initiative, delayed only because of the timing of its initial offering. There wasn't really any opposition to it, and so it's passed. The next meeting is in early September. One thing that I think is important for the BC to and its members to pay attention to is the call for members of the Policy Implementation Working Group. This is the group that will advise the GNSO on the proper balance between policy and implementation. I think the Trademark Clearinghouse saga is evidence that this is probably a working group on which the BC should have significant participation. And I would encourage those who can, who have the time, the will, the interest, to sign on. The call for members went out in mid-July.
Yeah, I think Jay Scott has volunteered for that working group.
Yes, I have. And I have received my acknowledgement. I'm on a list, and I pinged Jeff, who's the liaison, and asked him when we were getting started. And he said we were going to start right up. I'll ping him again. I have not heard back.
All right. Jeff Newman has said that he's willing to serve as the lead to get the thing organized, but he does not want to be the chair.
Right. So I volunteer to chair it.
Right. It's also possible that somebody from the BC. So others of us could be, I hope, will join J. Scott on that. Don't want to put on J. Scott's shoulders, broad as they might be. But I think this is going to be an ongoing and important discussion group for what ails ICANN.
I would agree.
Now, that's it.
All right. Thanks so much, John. And, you know, many thanks to Steve for an excellent discussion today focused on the policy issues, which I think is where we need to spend our time. I want to thank everyone for participating today. My apologies to Marilyn and to Chris. We did not get to your section, so if there are particular items that you would like to relay to the members, I would ask you to please send those on the list. So thank you so much to everyone. We'll talk to you next time, and have a great day. Thanks.